Have you ever noticed how some people can tell a story that just pulls you right in and others kind of lose you halfway through? There is a real art to storytelling, and today we're learning from one of the best. We're kicking off a special three-part series with Will Greenblatt of Out Loud Speaker School, and he is a master of helping leaders turn their stories into their superpower. In part one, we dive into Will's story and unpack why personal storytelling isn't just powerful, it's absolutely essential if you want people to remember you. So let's just say we didn't waste any time. We hit record and jumped right in. So pull up a seat, be a fly on the wall, and let's go.
If you can tell your three-act origin story and deploy it in different situations in a way that people can sort of quickly understand who you are, where you came from, and why you come to be sitting here, standing here talking to them, then it's just, it's a quicker route to helping people know you, like you, trust you. You have to be a good person. You have to back it up. It has to be real, you know, but it's the way of letting people in instead of waiting for a long time to open up to them. You start by being open and you help them understand who you are and how you came to be here. And the effects are, you know, remarkable. And it's not surprising because of how powerful story is, but every time I do this work and do it with more and more people, and I just see how powerful and how universal it is.
Okay. I'm excited about that. I don't know that I have one, or I can't wait for you to coach me on how to do it.
Yeah, you definitely have one, and it's about uncovering it.
Okay.
I know that. And that's the thing, right? Like we all say, well, I'm never interesting. I don't have a good story, but
yeah, everyone does.
We all have something we can dig out. And I think definitely as salespeople and as marketers, it just helps us to connect, right? To like have someone want you to win. If they know what you're all about, they're rooting for you more. So yeah. I'm excited to dive into this.
I think just practicing on storytelling is important too, because there's so much pitching going on. Pitching, I do this, I do this. This is what we do better. Everybody's hearing pitches. But when you start telling stories, that's what people remember. They remember the story about you. They don't remember the pitch, unfortunately, because there's just so much pitching. It's noise. Yeah.
Do you know Armchair Expert, the podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They do a great job. They start filming and they just start chatting about what seems.
Wait, is that Dax Shepard or yep. And I'm watching Kristen Bell's series right now.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
On Netflix. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
They do an amazing job. One of the best podcasts out there, I think.
Okay. I should listen. I've tuned in a couple times here and there. I don't listen to it religiously, Will, but a lot of people talk about it. So I should listen more just for the sake of being strategic and listening to how they storytell and giving that some deeper thought.
The premise is, they don't always say this, but they have said it a couple times, is they said, like, what if we could bring the openness of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting to a podcast?
Wow.
And so it's like real deep shit that they share in these, and they get stories out of people who have never shared them, but it feels so, it doesn't feel performative in the way that maybe a diary of the CEO might, even though they get great stories. And I'm sure a lot of those are real moments, but it feels a bit more polished, a bit more produced, a bit more like, okay, I'm going on Stephen Bartlett's podcast. I'm going to cry now. And, you know, but on on Armchair Expert, it's just this casual, and then Dax and Monica, I would say too, they lead the way by just being super open and vulnerable, but in a very casual way about just like, you know, Dax will be like, grew up with, you know, really abusive stepdads, got molested when I was a child, you know, had a lot of trauma. And he'll just sort of say this very casually, because you can tell he's been to therapy and he's done the AA stuff. So he just leads with his trauma, but shows you that it's okay to say. And then the guest reciprocates.
What's interesting, Will, I know you're going to lead us down a track, so I don't want to squirrel us too much, but there could be some good nuggets in here. How do we relate sometimes this to business world? So Dax Shepard is a famous celebrity.
Yep.
He has his own podcast. He can say whatever the F he wants, right? Yeah. We're on a mortgage podcast, and I want to get deeper there. Rachel and I could improve on our interview skills. There's something there. We could improve on getting deeper stories out of our guests, right? So there's something there. But it's, I don't want to say it has to be filtered, but it's not, we don't have that kind of full open forum that we want to get into every nitty-gritty detail. Dax feels, well, great question, Rachel. I don't know. I mean, where is the line on that with a business podcast?
Yeah,
it's an interesting question. I don't know.
There's no line. There's a line for every single individual listening, and it's different for every single individual listening. Yeah. So what you start to realize is there's no such thing as a line. There's everyone's individual line, and you will cross people's lines if you're saying anything of substance without realizing it, without even wanting to or trying to necessarily. But sometimes, like me just saying what I said, will hurt somebody's ears or feelings or in some way. And maybe they have a very good reason. Maybe they don't like how casually I just said what I said. And that's fair. But the thing is, what you always want to think about is, the question I always like to say is, how would I have this conversation go if I didn't want anything out of it? If it was just about human connection, and if I wasn't trying to sell something, if I wasn't trying to impress someone, if I didn't want someone's approval, if I didn't want to like stay within the lines of someone, what would I want to say? And then I try to use that as my guide to say, if I would say this to somebody in private in order to connect with them, in order to have a deeper moment, then I try to have the bravery and the balls to say that on a podcast. You know, I fall short all the time, but that's the goal for me is like, yeah, what would I say if I wasn't worried about the consequences? But I wanted to have a moment of human connection.
That's really thought-provoking, because how many times it is we do want stuff from people, right? And like Corinne and I will have these great conversations. We'll be on the phone and I'm like, darn it, that would have been a great podcast. We should have recorded that. But it's because you're just being yourself and you have nothing to gain or lose from it. And it's just honest and you know, not that it isn't otherwise, but we have a guard up, and all of a sudden, if I were to say right now, like, okay, guys, let's get started, even though we really have gotten started, right? All of a sudden we'd be like, have a different voice and a different sound and, you know, put on that persona. And I don't want that. I want to get to the real nitty gritty. We want to get to know people. We want them to know us, and we want them to like us and know us and trust us, because we're great people. We have a great company and great offering, but sometimes we feel like we have to perform.
Yeah. That's my whole thing. That's why I call myself a recovering child actor on LinkedIn. That's my little tagline. And the reason is because I got good at performing to get people to like me, but it only allowed me to be so, it only took me so far. And I'm not talking just about success. I'm talking also about like happiness and feeling good about myself. Like I could get cool people to think I was cool by performing, but I didn't feel good in myself. And I think ultimately I didn't build the kind of relationships or kind of career I wanted until I started going, okay, who am I really? What do I really believe? What do I really want to say? How do I not just agree with everything to go along? How can I stop just constantly trying to please other people and do what I want a little bit more, say what I want to say? And then just that's to me is my constant battle between my desire to get you two to like me, to get anyone to listening to this to like me. How can I switch the intention to be like, how do we say something interesting, valuable in the pursuit of truth, in the pursuit of like, you know, this human condition we're all trying to figure out? That should be the goal. And then the relationships, the money, the fame or career success, whatever, should just be a happy byproduct of it. And I'm trying to just let that be what it is. So instead of saying I'm at 10,000 followers now, I've got to get to 30. I'm just like, I'm going to express myself honestly and then let that go where it goes. And ironically, it's done better since I've done that. But, you know, that to me, that's the point of the work, is to be honest and to be real and to connect. And then everything else has to take a backseat to do this properly.
I like
Rather than like a dance for me clown. And you're like, oh, okay, I'll do my little performance and everyone likes me. But then you're like selling out.
Yeah. Wait a second. What am I doing here? What, like, how do I feel when I get off stage? And or yeah, can I look back on this and be proud of it? Can I feel like I actually tried to do something interesting or was I just shucking and jiving for money?
Yeah. All right, so what are we doing here? What are we gonna do? We're excited because this is, I feel like, a very different approach to, you know, a podcast. We jumped on and you were like, we'll do this coaching session. And then of course we always trying to kill two birds with one stone. I'm like, hey, let's make this a podcast and we will really put ourselves out there, Corinne. You don't even know what you signed up for, Corinne.
It's a good idea. I'm excited. This is going to be like a different one than just having our interview questions. I feel like Will's going to lead us down a path here. I don't know where it's going. I kind of
I don't know if I like it.
Great. And you might not. There might be moments where you're like, I don't appreciate what Will is doing. But no, this is great. And I also think there's an advantage here because I do this on stage sometimes with people a lot. Actually, I get somebody to stand up and tell their story. And even if it's just another 10, 15, 20 people in the room, that's very exposing. Sure. Now, more people are going to watch this, but we have the advantage of just like sitting here in our, wherever we are in our places and just seeing three little squares. So we can kind of forget about anybody potentially watching this moment to moment. And I suggest that we do that. I'm going to tell you my story and then I'm going to ask you some questions about about what you think about what I told you. And then I'm going to tell you the three act origin story structure. I'm going to share that with you. And we're going to ask some questions about it until we understand it. And then one by one, Rach and Corinne, we're going to go through yours.
Okay.
I'm going to do that a little on the speedier side than I might normally would. But I think we're going to find some really interesting things out about how you guys are showing up, where you are showing up, and how you could maybe do that a bit more vulnerably, authentically, create slightly more interesting and deeper conversations with people, especially the people who you really want to work with or you really like, and show you how to be the kind of person who lives what I call story first, honoring the fact that stories are primal, they are primary for human beings, they're how we relate, and the person who shares first opens up the room for everyone else, and it's a beautiful gift that you can give people. So yeah, does that sound good?
Yes,
sounds great. I'm excited.
Okay. So yeah, but I'm going to go first. So this way you can let me be the guinea pig, so to speak.
All right.
So we're talking about the Toronto Blue Jays being in the World Series. And seriously, this is kind of a full circle moment for me these days. One of my earliest memories is the Blue Jays. I mean, like wearing t-shirts and hats, playing baseball as a young kid, playing catch with my dad. And then I remember clearly my dad coming home from the Sky Dome in 1993. I believe it was on Halloween, and screaming his head off and saying, "We won, we won, we won." And he was probably drunk. I didn't know that at the time, but I can't imagine he wasn't at that game. And me and my little brother were like, "Oh yeah, great." And there was just this energy. Yeah, that sort of is a core memory of my childhood, you know, living in this modest house near Trinity Bellwoods. You know, my family was kind of solidly middle class, comfortable, but not wealthy, but just like, you know, three kids, a dog, a cat, two parents who lived together. Pretty uncommon in that way, middle class household. The thing that was weird about my childhood was I started acting at age 7. I got an audition for a movie with Anne Bancroft, and it was an American feature film. So that, as a Canadian kid, was huge. And it started this childhood acting career where I was the lead in a couple TV shows. I was on a couple Disney Channel shows. I wasn't famous, but I did enough to sort of always get auditions for things. My agent was quite well respected. So I basically had like a real career as a child and thought that, okay, I'm going to be an actor. This is my path is set. How lucky to know by like 12 years old what you're going to do. But of course, I didn't know. And a year before I graduated high school, my little brother Luke passed away in a accident. He was on a canoe trip while I was on my own canoe trip, and he drowned in the river through a series of unfortunate events, bad decisions potentially from the people who were working with him, but basically one of those things that you couldn't have known would happen. And obviously for us, it was a horrible shock. The way I dealt with that as a young man was to hang out with my friends as much as I could to try to like soak up something that wasn't the pain of my family, and also to do drugs and to drink alcohol and to smoke a lot of weed and to just try to, you know, use that as a way to numb the pain. And then that just got more and more. And I think everybody was doing that around me, but I was definitely using it as sort of self-medication. When I went to theater school, I was in that bad sort of place, and it just wasn't a good environment for me because it was very emotional, very taxing. We had kids dropping out all over the place with eating disorders and mental health episodes. And so I was just, I really didn't thrive there. So when I graduated, I was like, I don't know what I need to do, but I got to stop whatever this is because this life sucks. So I got my teaching English certificate and traveled to Spain with a friend of mine to teach English. And I discovered I love teaching English. I could see people's like eyes lighting up when they understood something. And I was like, oh, I'm performing at the front of the room, but they're talking to me. It's a two-way thing all of a sudden. And that was awesome. And I realized that how much I liked that. But I was still with my friends. They had come to Spain with me. Another one of us joined us. I was still partying and doing drugs. And I was still performing to get people to like me, which had been a big theme of my childhood. I never felt good about who I really was. And then with those same friends, I went to China and became a co-founder of a startup, which was a mess, but it showed me that you could start your own business. So when I came back to Canada, trying to figure out what was next, but really still suffering, two great things happened. One of which is I finally got told to go to therapy by a doctor that I listened to. And then the other thing is I started my own public speaking and coaching business with an acting mentor of mine. And since then, I've been extremely lucky. I've got to speak in 6 different countries. I've done over 275 talks. I've worked with some huge companies like Google and Wayfair, Ericsson, Boston Dynamics, HMA Mortgage. And the more and more that I do this work, the more I realize what I believe to be true, which is that there is no greater asset to a human being than their story. And so if you share it, you give a gift to your audience, you give a gift to yourself by knowing yourself more deeply. And there are so many secondary amazing benefits to your career when you build those relationships with people, even strangers, parasocial relationships. And now I've got 2 kids and a dog and a wife, and I'm super thrilled about that. And it just reiterates my belief that everybody's just trying to have a life they love and feel good about themselves. And so I want to figure out how I can make a $1 million public speaking and coaching business and teach other people to do the same and spread this message of how important personal storytelling is.
Wow. That was vulnerable.
That was very good.
Very good. And honest, yeah, you know, and real.
Any thoughts, Corinne, of what that experience was like, just sort of hearing that and what that did to you, what that made you think of me differently, anything?
No, I don't think differently. I just think I think it's hard. My planny brain, you're going to have to shut down a little bit. Like, you had some interesting tidbits there as a child. You had a family tragedy that a lot of people can relate to, some type of tragedy or something that saddened them, a sickness, a family member, a death. Right. And you related it to some down points of your life that happened after it and how it affected you. And then you pulled it into how it builds some experiences for you that have led you to the success you're now seeing. So you were very skilled in how you told the story, but it also had actual kind of climatic moments and transitions of chapter that really made sense. It was hard for me to not think about as I was listening to you, well, what am I going to say? And I'm sure you've heard clients right. say this to you 100 times. Well, yeah. What am I going to say? I don't know that I have anything good like that. And that's probably where you'll help people because, as you said, everybody has something to say, but probably a struggle on getting it out of them, right?
Yeah.
But you obviously, I was expecting it to be good and it was good. Yeah. And, but those are some of the notables that I took out of it. And I don't know if that's on purpose or if that's just totally organic and how you're sharing it.
It's right? Totally on purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Rachel, yeah. No, totally. And you basically intuited the whole structure. I'm just going to give you some language for it in a bit, but you saw the whole structure. Like, you got the whole point, which is that I started in my childhood. I went to the low moments. And I tried to emphasize how the low moments helped me get to the now high moments, which is where I'm at in my life now and happy about it. And you basically figured out the structure. It's a simple 3-act structure. We're going to go into it. But that's awesome that you did because it shows that you already know how a good story is told. Yeah, Rachel, I just want to get your insights before we dive into the next part.
Yeah, I mean, I think knowing this about you and hearing this, it it made me want to root for you a little bit more, you know, like if I wanted you to win. I want to work with you more. I want to see your business grow. I want to be invested in your, you know, in the outcome. And then of course, same as Corinne, I was seeing myself in your story as well, you know, finding points of relatability, whether it was, you know, an early memory of being at a baseball game. I share that same memory of going to my first Phillies game with my uncle. And, you know, I think we naturally.
Sorry about 93, by the way. Yeah. That moment was great. That time was great for me. Awful for a Phillies fan.
I know. Yeah. But you know, it's interesting. Like you do naturally. I think when someone tells a story, you put yourself in that story and find yourself like, oh, okay, what would I have done in that situation? Or did I have something similar that happened to me? And I think naturally, that's why storytelling is such a great connector, because we find relatability in what you're saying or not.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody's really turned off by your story, but that's okay, because we're not for everybody and everyone's not for us. People. So that's okay.
That's brilliant. I think you guys hit on most of the points that I often hear in workshops when I share this and then ask them, you know, what do you think? How do you feel? The rooting for you thing is something that was a surprise to me when I started teaching this, but makes perfect sense. It's like, you know, if you're watching a movie and they show you a person on the screen that you've never met, and you see that person as a child, and then you watch that person grow up, and then you see them go through some stuff and overcome it, you are rooting for them as the audience member.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it makes total sense that hearing somebody's life story told in a decent way, and you know, going back to childhood, I think is really important, not just as a tactic, but also just psychologically, and why so many stories go back to childhood, because that's what forms us, right? Like you don't just exist as a 22-year-old and just, you know, are a blank slate until you graduate university. Like, all that shit pushes you in a certain direction, causes you to be who you are. The rooting for you thing is really important. And it's so hard, because when we're doing these things, I both have to sing the praises of this work and also try to caution against making it too strategic. Because if it is too strategic, then it rings really hollow and gross. But if it is not, but if it's not respected, the craft of storytelling, if you don't respect it or know it enough, then you're just missing out on this incredible tool for human connection. So it's this delicate dance of like doing it well, but trying to also do it honestly.
I do want to say one thing though, because I kind of just had a eureka moment where, you know, you're watching a movie and there are characters that you just don't like. You're like, they better not win. Like, they better not come out in the end. Like, sometimes you like want that character to die off or whatever it is. And isn't that interesting? Like, I'm sure there people don't want us to die or see us fail, but when they don't really get us and they don't really understand you, they might be kind of, I don't know, rooting against you. But when they do know your story, it's not even that they're rooting for you, but it's like that negative side goes away too.
Yes. Because people's contexts are really hard to. It's really hard to hate someone when you sort of feel like you get the full picture of them.
Yeah.
Like even somebody who really pisses you off, and then you meet somebody who knows them and you go, you know, that person's dad, like, you know, grew up in and out of jail and their mom had a lot of problems. And you just start to hear that, you go, oh, fuck. Oh, I can't hate them anymore. You know, you get that feeling where you're like, damn it. I just wanted to hate them as like an adult with no childhood. And then you hear their childhood context and you're like, okay. This is my empathy is kicking in, and I start to understand that people have context. And even if I don't like somebody, I once I start to see them as a full human being with a story, like, you know, just like mine, if not the same, at least like me, they have a story, then it's harder to hate them. It's harder to ascribe negative motivations to the things they do. So to me, that's the power of story. It's context. So if it's fake, and if it's too strategic, then you're not actually providing real context and you're just manipulating people. But if you honestly spend some time with yourself, and I advocate for therapy a lot, and I always say my work is not therapy, but story work of the kind that I do, I think is really, really helpful. So if you do the work with yourself to think back, why am I the way that I am? Why did I choose to do the things that I do? What really shaped me? How did that make me feel? Where do my values come from my life experience? Then you can just give people your context a little more easily and a little more freely and a little more quickly. And you build relationships just a bit faster and on a bit of a deeper level.
I imagine this to be even more important now than ever because of automation, because of AI, because everything can be so easily duplicated. Like, we're kind of losing a little bit of ourselves, a lot of bit of ourselves in our stories and our, you know, our quirkiness. Everyone wants to be perfect and get it done fast. And I'm a product of that. But I don't want to steal your thunder. I mean, do you see that?
Oh yeah. I hate generative AI, like with a deep passion, as you can probably guess. Mm. The process of like wrestling with the blank page or the blank mind, like in a speaking situation, is like as close to sacred as it gets for me.
Yeah.
And outsourcing that to a machine that's going to scan the entirety of other people's outputs and create something that's just a pure amalgamation, a pure imitation of the sum of all those parts, to me is just gross. And I, you know, maybe people won't understand why I feel that strongly, but it disgusts me. And I really think that those of us who are adults and who grew up lucky enough to have to struggle with the blank page and coming up with our own thoughts and ideas with no help, any of us who promote this to children or to anyone else as a cool tool for the future and as anything but like a real problem, I think are really insane. You know, in that particular field, they're probably great people otherwise, but it's insane to me that any grown adult is saying, oh, use AI for writing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's almost nothing more important than figuring out how to speak and write, in my opinion. Obviously I'm biased, and to outsource that to a machine is insane. And it's too good. It's too good at it. And it's going to get, and it becomes easier and easier the more you do it. So
also to have a real conversation, some younger people, so much of commenting on the phones and texting and the Snapchatting and all the tools and how they communicate now is different than how we learned to communicate, you know, 30, 40 years ago, depending on how old everybody is. But
yeah,
you know, just sitting and having a conversation, you're not looking at anything. There's no devices.
Yeah.
You're just sitting and having a conversation. That's it.
Human connection.
That concerns me a bit with the younger generation.
Yeah.
Because they're just groomed very differently than how we were.
But the adults are going to lose it too. Like how many of us, you know, how many of us leave the house without our phones for the GPS anymore? So it's like your faculties erode if you don't use them. So even though I grew up taking maps and printing out directions or taking a paper map, I don't do that anymore. And I'm worse at it. And that's going to be the same thing, is the more you use the generative AI to think of words for you, the less good you'll be at thinking of your own words. And thinking of your own words is just one of the most important things that you can do. And expressing that to another human being to say, hey, do you feel like this? I feel like this. Kazuo Ishiguro, I'm probably messing his name up, but he's the guy who wrote Remains of the Day and Clara and the Sun. And he had a great quote that I saw somebody share. Jay Akunzo shared this on LinkedIn, that storytelling is somebody going, hey, I feel this way. Do you understand how I feel? Do you feel this way too? And that's the magic of it. When you read a writer's work and you're like, holy fuck, they said this thing that I thought I was the only person in history to ever feel. And that's the power. And if you take that away when you outsource writing to ChatGPT, because the AI cannot have a perspective because it has billions of perspectives. So it cannot have a singular unique perspective, which is what a writer and an author has. So anyway, sorry, I've gone off on my...
No, thank you. Thank you for even, you know, going that and being that passionate about it, because as parents, like, it is a constant struggle just to get our kids away from screens. And, you know, when you have creative little humans, like, this is just something that I think everyone needs to hear again and again and again to not take the easy way out.
Yeah.
And we've all been guilty of that. Maybe not with like saying, hey, use this to write your paper. I'm not even saying that, but just to get out of the box and put the screens down and go out and be weird and creative and be bored and come up with something, because that's where the stories happen. And if that doesn't happen, then you're not going to be here in 30 years telling your story because you have none.
Yeah. Yeah.
There. Of course, we're cutting the clip right where it gets good. Classic podcast move. But the crazy part is we're actually just getting started. Next week, we're going to dive into part two with Will Greenblatt, where he breaks down his three-act origin story. You're not going to want to miss this because this is the secret sauce for adding structure, emotion, heart, everything good to your story so that people actually feel it. So don't miss next week. Mark your calendar and get ready to pick up right where we left off. Don't forget to like and subscribe, Lending Leadership. We'll catch you next time.